Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to a brand new episode of The Local Lens, a podcast where we go inside one community's experience with the drug epidemic. We are coming to you from Stanton, Kentucky, a small town nestled at the foothills of Appalachia. So everyone in our community sees the opiate crisis a little bit differently from each other, and that experience is shaped by either our personal lives or our professional roles. So what we're doing with this show, then, is we're gathering all of those perspectives and having in-depth conversations with lots of different people with lots of perspectives on the crisis at hand. So in this week's episode, we are joined by Mr. Brad Epperson, who is a preacher in Clay City, Kentucky, and he also works at the Powell County Jail with the Substance Abuse Program. Brad's a good friend of mine, and one of my favorite things about Brad is that he's great at looking below the surface on other people. And that's exactly what he's on the show to do with us today. Using his pastoral perspective, where he looks over our entire community and studies them, as well as his experience in the substance abuse program working with these guys in the jail. Well, anyways, let's go on and get into the episode. I'm your host, Nate Brooks, and you're listening to The Local Lens, a Powell County Cares project.
This is my hometown. This is where I grew up, and these are my people here. And it's nice to get to live here. It's nice to be able to live at home. I know a lot of folks, when you grow up in a small community like ours, you a lot of times you end up leaving and having to stay gone for work and things like that. I'm so thankful that I've been able to move back home after some time away and to be able to live here. And that's brought me back into the community as a pastor. And also, I get the privilege of working at the local detention center and the substance abuse program. And I'll do a little work on occasion at one of our local funeral homes as well. And like I said, it's just a real thrill to be able to be here in our community where I'm from and among people that I feel a real connection to.
So a lot of what's coming in this conversation is a mix of Brad's two different roles. One of them being his personal experience dealing with the guys in the jail program, and the other being looking at his congregation and the entire community as a whole. So we're drawing a lot of connections between these two, trying to figure out how they're related. And it's all just speculation. There aren't facts behind this. It's all just pulling from personal experience. So just to clarify, we're not saying that we have the answers here. We're just talking through some ideas of what might be going on and how it may be a more societal issue than we may think. All right, let's get back into it with Brad. Here we go.
I do think that there is a sort of a crisis of masculinity mm-hmm. somewhere in that for a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to just speculate for a moment, and I don't have any hard data. This is just me thinking out loud here. We live in a time where I think the idea of what it means to be masculine, to be a man in the world, that's a little bit hard to pin down anymore. It's hard. People don't even understand how to begin to answer that question. And so we've got a generation of younger men right now who they didn't have necessarily, a lot of them didn't have significant role models in life to show them these things, or that were there but showed them the wrong things and got them into these, you know, this situation. But when you don't have a good answer for the question there on what does it mean for me, what kind of man should I be, then how do I know when I've hit the target? How do I know when I'm being a good man? What things make that up? And it just seems like so many are casting about looking for a path and not really seeing any signs or guideposts that point them in a direction. And I think it just leaves them at a as a prime target for this kind of life to come after them. And I think one of the things, I'll be honest with you, I think one of the most important things that could be done, and I don't know exactly how it would look, but I think mentorship of young men is an important part of addressing this problem. I think taking this generation, and not everybody in this generation is this way at all, but so many guys are 25 or 30 years old and they still sit in the basement and play video games all day long. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with video games, but somewhere they're just not sure how to transition from childhood into adulthood, and it leaves them vulnerable. It really does. Yeah. And I think finding a way to address that would be a good thing.
So when you're saying young men, like what kind of age range are you?
I'm talking about, you know, let's take late teens to, 30, 35 mm-hmm. even. I mean, you know, that seems like this sliding scale of it's just moving, it's just creeping upward where there's just sort of an aimlessness that's mm-hmm. prevalent among so many. By no means is that an absolute, statement about that generation of people. Not at all. But we see it becoming more prevalent.
Yeah, and it's especially like it's been absolutely exposed on the internet and all that, like mm-hmm. about every problem with the millennial generation that exists. And you're a part of the millennial generation.
I'll take that as a compliment, but I was actually at the tail end of Gen X. But anyway, you know, I'm somewhere in that crossover point, I guess. But yeah. a lot of folks my age mm-hmm. have been through that challenge, and but I feel like that we've gone through some societal shifts. Mm-hmm. That have made it. I mean, I don't think it's fair to sit back and point accusing fingers at people mm-hmm. that are in that age bracket and say, what's wrong with you people? I think there have been some significant societal shifts that mm-hmm. have left those
questions. Would you like to speak
questions.
On that?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I think one of the things that I would speak on here mm-hmm. that comes back into some of the questions that we have to talk about with the opioid addiction and those problems there, I think that we have moved farther and farther away from seeing life as having a spiritual core. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you've taken away the spiritual core, the whole foundation there, I think that you've lost something. I think that the best, most solid foundations that you can build on and the guideposts that you can guide your life by are going to be spiritual. And I feel like in the modern day, we have taken that away from that generation. We've tried to remove that from them. Mm-hmm.
So through all that, we started hitting on what's probably the biggest theme of this conversation is the societal shifts, just how things have changed over the years.
How much room are we giving this generation to do that? You know what I'm saying? Let me give you an example of this. Please. So I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were complaining about their 12-year-old. And they're maybe 13, 14, I don't know. Their kid was early adolescent, middle adolescent, mm-hmm. something like that. And they were complaining because he doesn't ever get out of the house and help them mow the yard. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I had to mow the yard. And I said, just quick question to you. I said, what kind of lawnmower you got? And he said, I got a zero-turn lawnmower, professional series. I said, what'd that thing cost you? And he kind of smiled. He said, $9,000 or $10,000. I said, you going to let that 12-year-old drive around on that mower? And he said, probably not. And I said, then what are you complaining about? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We complain about a generation that we really, in some ways, we have not given them the room mm-hmm. in some ways or mm-hmm. the expectation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes people fail not under the weight of heavy expectation, but sometimes people fail under the reality of having no expectations, mm-hmm. and I think that's a sad thing.
And I think that kind of goes like right in line with.
I think that's part of what's going on here. I think mm-hmm. I think you've got a generation ahead of those mm-hmm. millennials that you're talking about who haven't got things figured out either. They were dealing with not having the clear signposts, and then mm-hmm. How are they going to pass that on to their kids to know how to follow in behind them when they're not really sure where they're going either. And again, I could seem preachy on this if I'm not careful, so I want to avoid that.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. I don't even know how you would begin to address that other than like you solidify communities. It seems it seems to me like one thing I've always benefited from, like in like how I've been raised, like there was a congregation of people 50 years older than me that like I could go to any of their porches right now and I would get a dinner from them, and like I would get prayer over me if that's what they thought I needed, and
as like, a cool part of being part of a community,
yes,
which is multi-generational, multi-background, but you felt you felt like you were a part of that, right? I mean, you felt plugged in.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the problem that we have a generation that's just like it's separated from the community, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. That's just not great. You know what I'm saying?
It's not great. It's really easy to kind of unplug from everything that's going on
Absolutely.
And like live in your own world and find this tunnel on the internet that you're going to like go through, and that's your thing. If you're a part of that community,
well, that's exactly what I was thinking about when I was talking about some of the societal shifts. Mm-hmm. I just talked over top of you, Nate. Forgive me.
Dude, you're good.
You rang my bell, and I got started. Forgive me, but
please, that's what we're here for.
All
right.
So I think one of the societal shifts that we're going through is that we're starting to live. People actually, the space that they live within, mm-hmm. especially the younger generation, but not strictly limited to them, the space they live within is a digital space.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may be a part of a digital community.
Mm-hmm.
But now here's the thing about a digital community. I mean, I get to build that however I want, right?
Yeah,
I get to decide who's in my community and who's not.
Yeah.
And I don't ever have to go sit on the porch of somebody and spend time with them when they might look at me and say, you know what, you need to do this better. You need to do this different. Or let me show you this.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid growing up on North Fork, my neighbor was Jimmy Skidmore. Jimmy Skidmore is an excellent man. Mm-hmm. And he was an excellent neighbor. And but now, when he was out working in his garden, I knew that if I went sauntering down the road in front of his field, that he might draft me to pick rocks up out of his garden. He might say, hey, come here. I got a job for you. You know what I'm saying? But that was part of living in community. That's what that looked like. And now, you know, I'm just not so sure we have exactly that. It's not it's not as organic as that anymore. And I just wonder if there's not some kind of cost in that somewhere.
I believe there has to be some kind of thing we're giving up, and that's
right.
The program you're involved with at the jail mirrors that. It just takes that and like
puts them back in. And again, so when I talk about a possible solution or part of a solution, mm-hmm. a broader solution, being a mentorship thing, and we could talk about mentorship and assume that means let's find some 12-year-olds and 15-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think you got to start it. A little higher than that. I almost think you got to reach up into some folks in adulthood, saying, "Hey, you know what? You want to come alongside us here? We're just going to talk about what life means and show each other how we live and things like that."
I think that like you're hitting it on the head, and like it's something that like somebody from your position of leadership like has to kind of bring up. I think just like almost calling out like every individual, like I see it as a community-wide problem. Like it's, and like your community, like it tends to be like a reflection of like a whole society, mm-hmm. but like this community has the potential to be much different.
It does. And, it really does. Yeah. I think that almost there's this sense of, I think what Rick Bragg would call false pride, you know what I'm saying? We'll pretend that nothing is wrong. We'll pretend. And who do you think you are to tell me something? But anyway, I think it's a good time for our community to say, okay, something's got to be done here. I think, and this might tie back into what we were saying there a minute ago, but I think one of the things that we're seeing shifts in societally, we're moving from practical realities to theoretical realities, if that makes sense.
I think so.
So I think this is a generational difference. Mm-hmm. I look back to the generation of the oldest members of our congregation here at church, for example, mm-hmm. and their life was practical. I mean, their life was what they were going to get out there and what they were going to do and mm-hmm. make things happen and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the line, there's been a shifting away from that to just get the theory down. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter if you do it or not; just understand the theory, and you feel accomplished already. And so we could talk about the shift from, we're talking about masculinity, practical masculinity, to theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to podcasts all the time, and I have to roll my eyes at all these guys talking about being an alpha male.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what that it means. They go to the gym a lot and they talk about being an alpha male. I mean, that seems like that's all, but I'm looking at these tough as nails old guys that are 90 years mm-hmm. old. There's a fellow in our congregation who's in his 90s now, mm-hmm. and
And they've called me in several times saying, oh, he's about to die. Well, I'm seriously thinking he's going to be at my funeral someday. I went to see him, and I thought he was on his deathbed, and he wasn't. Where I said, well, I asked his wife, I said, well, where's he at? And she said, there's a big pile of rocks out behind the house. He went out there to move around. Okay, I thought he was about to. But, I mean, that was just, I mean, he got to feeling better, so he got up and did something, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. What about the shift, like, even, you know, from practical Christianity to theoretical Christianity? That's a deadly shift. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some theory and there's some things to be believed that are, you know, fundamentally important. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like we've gotten to the place where we think that it's everything's going to be all right as long as I think the right things and believe the right things. But mm-hmm. no question comes in about what am I going to do with it. And yeah, that doesn't work. That, James is clear that that won't work. Yeah, you know, the only way to see it is to see it in action. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's again, I don't know what you do with that, Nate. But
well, so let me ask me you. Talking. Let me ask you this then, from your vantage point, then, what would be your prescription then to our community first? What do you think would actually help, like, turn the story of opioid usage around and like get it to be a community that's all uplifting and everybody's working towards a better future? Take that how you feel.
Okay, you know, and I don't know that I can say it in a sentence, but I'll try to mm-hmm. say it in four or five.
That's fine, yeah.
But there's preacher math involved here, so you know what? There's a multiplier you got to figure in.
Plenty of commas.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'll talk in much run-on sentence.
Yeah.
But I think there's a couple things I would mention. I think understanding that there is a spiritual core in everything. Mm-hmm. There's a spiritual core somewhere in this addiction. Ultimately, the guys that I see do well and seem to do well long term are the guys who connect with the spiritual core. Mm-hmm. That brings hope. There's a question on the list here, I think, that you asked about. You were going to ask me about getting away from the stigma or the shame of that.
Yes.
If I could talk about that for just a moment and lay that against something.
Please do.
Shame can be a powerful motivator, but it can be just as powerful a demotivator. Mm-hmm. And so shame can move people, but it can lock them down too. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure how trustworthy shame is, really. Mm-hmm. A much better resource than shame is hope. Mm-hmm. Hope. And hope brings with it some spiritual resources. It's the ability to look beyond where you are now and to see where you very well may get to be. And so I think that's an incredible element. And again, it's a spiritual thing. So seeing a spiritual core to this is important. I think also becoming people of action. You know, this is going to require an investment, not of tax dollars. I mean, maybe of tax dollars, yes, but... But more than that, it's going to take an investment of time and of energy and of picking up a whole segment of the population that we can't produce as, or I'm sorry, that we can't pretend is just those people anymore. Because mm-hmm. the truth is, I can't think of a family in our community that's not affected by this some way, somehow.
Yeah.
So that's just a non-starter to say it's those people out there. It's our people. It's mm-hmm. our people. It's going to take an investment of a lot of individuals within this community, of their time, their energy, their prayer, their involvement to rescue. You know, I want to say a generation, though it's not all in one generation, but a whole group of people right now who are falling through the cracks, and I think it's going to have to include connection with those folks, mm-hmm. connecting with them to meet them where they are. Is it frustrating? Oh my gosh, yes, it's frustrating. But I think it's worth doing. I really do believe so. Just for a moment, I could talk about why it's frustrating.
Please.
Everybody knows why
Please
it's
do.
Frustrating. There's another question that you ask here, and you say, that you gave to me, that you asked, would you say that addiction is a disability/disease? Now that's a difficult question. That's a hard one.
It is.
I'm not sure it's a helpful one. And what I mean by that is this. I think sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking that if we can categorize a thing, that our work is done. It reminds me of a discussion that Jesus had with his disciples
when they saw, they encountered this man who was born blind, right? You remember the story? And his disciples, apparently, they're under the idea that, that what they need to do is figure out who's to blame. Whose fault is this? Why is this? Is it whose sin led to this man being born blind? Was it his sin or was it his parents' sin? And Jesus says it's not got anything to do with that. What are you talking about? Let's deal with the problem that is instead of trying to figure out where the blame goes. Now, I come back to this question about whether addiction is a disability or a disease. If we answer yes or if we answer no, how much closer does that really move us to the solution to it all? I don't know. Is it a disability or a disease? Yes and no. I think it is both. It behaves like a disease in a lot of ways. It does. It alters the body. It alters brain chemistry. There's no doubt about that. And yet, when I ask those guys at the jail who are living this, more than half of them will resent you saying that they have a disease. Because they say that makes them feel powerless. They say that takes away any control that they have over it. They say, so it's, sometimes it's like a disease, but somewhere I have to have an ability to make a choice. Even if I can't just choose not to have it, I can choose to get help. I can choose to begin things that lead me on to somewhere else. And so that's a part of that too, not seeing it just as an unhelpable disease. Understand that there are some moral implications here. Understand that these folks have burned a lot of bridges and they've hurt a lot of people and they've seen a lot of destruction. It's frustrating. It's frustrating dealing with people. But there's a lot of help that can be done. A lot of lives that can be changed.
I think it's really easy from the outside of like from outside the jail walls to like see numbers, see statistics, see scientific research on it and be like, okay, they've said that, it's that's enough to convince me. And it's really easy to detach this whole like problem from like human faces, from like people that have whole lives and whole stories and but also people that have like whole choice over like if they're going to like come back, if they're going to fight it.
I think that's
important to hear.
From these guys. And you know, I think our community offers some places and ways that people can become involved. And I think probably we need to try to really educate our community about ways that they can make a difference. There's nothing more frustrating than feeling like I see a problem and I don't know how to do anything about it. We have lots of ministries, we have lots of programs and things like that happening in our community that could always use more support. I'm thinking about, for example, Celebrate Recovery. Celebrate Recovery is a wonderful Christ-centered 12-step program, and you know, I'm speaking as a pastor, so that Christ-centered thing matters to me. And I know there's lots of folks out there that may listen to this that may not be their thing, but I mean, that's what I believe, and I believe that addressing spiritual issues is the most fundamental, important thing to do. But so for example, with Celebrate Recovery, I know there are things and ways that people can do to be involved in that, to come to that, to be supportive. You know, if you just wanted to write out a card, you know, we do cards for soldiers. We do cards for, send cards to people we'll never see or meet, just put on it a soldier. Well, you know what you can do? You can send a card to Celebrate Recovery and say, share this with somebody that's struggling, just to let them know that I don't have to know who they are, I'm praying for them. And little things like that. Just to maybe just show up and help serve food at a CR event would be a helpful thing. There are AA meetings that can always use. I mean, there's just lots of ways that people can enter into this and can make actual living connection with folks that are struggling but are trying to find a way out. And that's important.
I'll tell you one thing that I've always thought was really interesting, like from the aspect of service too, like talking about people that can get involved in some of this stuff, like people that can give their hand and help out a little bit. One thing, and some of the service organizations I've been a part of, they really stressed it's not one person serving another, because that creates a barrier between people. It's like people working together so that people can be better.
They serve each other. That's right. That's it.
Because just as much as somebody comes in, like if somebody comes in that like makes the best broccoli casserole on the planet and brings it and gives it to people, but like they're being served back just as many like lessons in humanity at least, and just like their eyes may like be just as closed as anybody else's. Right. Just like if you look at yourself as the hero of that situation rather than like as like we're working together to reach some kind of solution. We're trying to build everybody up. And so that's something I've always thought was important.
I think that's a good way to talk about and define what community means.
Mm-hmm.
That's us serving each other. Mm-hmm. Us making one another's lives better and easier somehow by helping carry those burdens. And I think that's important. I think it's important for those folks that are struggling, that are caught in this, to know that there is a community waiting for them and we want them to be a part of it. We want them to live. And we want them to find their place within this community. We're not trying to throw you away. We're not trying to say you're useless, you've made too many mistakes. We want you in our community. We want you to be here. To use a picture from sort of the Christian faith and from the church life, we want to wash your feet and you to wash ours. That's an important picture there, I think. And that's... Yeah, I think I like what you said there. I think that's it. I don't need to show up and be the hero. I just need to show up and be somebody who shows human respect to others, value, and receives the same in turn. That's right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is Brad Epperson. Now, I love talking to this guy because, once again, he's so good at looking at people, and people as a whole, too, as an entire community. And I think his analysis of how our community is working nowadays is pretty accurate. And I think what we should take away from that is that we all have a hand in helping. We can all participate in this community and try to make it better for everyone involved. Anyways, that's all the time that we have today. Thank you so much, Brad, for being on the show and sharing your thoughts with us. I know it may have seemed like we were just rambling and going on whatever tangents we wanted at times, but that happens. I'd also like to thank WSKV for broadcasting the show. You guys are great. And thanks to the health department for letting there be a show in the first place. You're listening to The Local Lens. This is Nate Brooks, your host. These are our people using our voices, telling our stories, because no one sees it like we do.